we got.
Now, filling in for Jerry Springer, Mark Maron on the radio.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and lurking conservatives, of course. How's everybody doing this morning? It's Mark Maron. I'm in for Jerry Springer. The rabbi, as I call him, is out doing what Jerry Springer does on any given day, the master of all media. He's dancing, or he's shooting his television show, or he's flying internationally. I don't know where Jerry Springer finds the time to do all that stuff. I can barely get out of bed in the morning and get some coffee into me. I swear to God, if I do my laundry and read two newspapers, that's a day. My buddy Jimmy Earle. Jim Earle is here with me. How are you, Jim?
Good morning, people. Good morning, Mark.
Nice to see you, man.
Yeah, I've been watching Jerry on the, Dancing with the Stars. Yeah.
Jim, you are like, you are the reality television guy. You watch all the reality television shows.
Yeah.
Where the hell do you find the time to do that? I cannot make time to watch that
stuff.
It's
very simple, Mark. Yeah. I'm unemployed.
Oh. How's that going? Well, I'm glad I got you out of bed
today. It's going great. I'm seeing all these great, I'm seeing Mark, him Springer dance. It's a joy.
I'm assuming that Jerry's a good dancer. He's got to be a good dancer. He's one of those guys. He's like an old kind of classy guy. Is he a good dancer? How's he doing on the show?
Mark, he stinks.
Oh.
Yeah, but, he's a favorite on the show. But he stinks. He's, call a spade a spade. He's not a very good dancer, but, people have a lot of fun with it.
But he's earnest and he tries. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
That's what reality television is about, and that's what annoys me about it. Not so much in terms of this dance TV show that you're talking about, but in terms of reality television in general, I have become, I have a lot of contempt for shows like American Idol. I have contempt for America's Talent, Most Talented, whatever the hell that show was. I have contempt for the stand-up show, what is it, Last Comic Standing?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's my belief that there was a time, granted. Now, I know this may not be important news, and we are going to talk about elections. We're going to talk about voting. We're going to talk about stem cells a bit. We're going to talk about alternative energy. We're going to talk about a lot of things, but you seem to have gotten me going on a sort of a pet peeve of mine, which is that talent shows are fine. I have no problem with the idea of the talent show, where amateurs try to do something that professionals are paid good money to do because they're professionals. But they're usually generally the idea of the talent show, when talent shows were popular on TV in the 50s, they've always been popular, was the idea that it was showcase of regular people's like, oh, look at that, the dentist can sing. Oh, look at that, the guy who works over at the fruit stand can stand on his head and juggle at the same time. That stuff may have been great in the 50s where they were giving $100 or a set of pans to somebody. But now what's happened is that these entertainment conglomerates, these huge companies have realized this is another way to push truly talented people aside, people who might be original, people who might actually have something to say or a real talent in terms of singing or stand-up or whatever, and just do the same hackneyed thing that everybody's used to. I think that when you watch something like American Idol, you're watching amateurs being rewarded for trying. All right. None of them are that original. They all hit the same hackneyed notes. People fall in love with them because they're like, hey, I could do that. And it's, to me, it's sort of like it's just as if a car comes up next to you and you're sitting there singing in your car and you're doing an okay job of it. And some guy in the car next to you goes, hey, good job. Here's $1 million for singing good in your car. We're going to give you a record deal. But I think that, as you know, and I think that what happens with these reality shows is that here's the full arc. I think, Jim, is someone wins American Idol, okay? They get a record deal, all right? They got a lot of fans of people going, hey, I don't care if he's original, but, he's such a nice guy, and he really tried really hard. So those people buy his record, make him $1 million. The second record stinks, okay? So then he hits the skids. He gets a drug problem, starts to lose his confidence. Whatever the case, then he ends up on another show, the reality show about the guy who used to be on the first reality show that got famous, blew it, and now he's on the rehab show. And it never ends until somebody dies.
Actually, that's in the American Idol contract.
It is? That you could just go on and do more reality shows?
In the drug problem and the dying.
I watched a little Danny Bonaducci show. I'd never seen that before.
Oh, you see, aren't you fascinated with it? What about Hell's Kitchen?
I'm fascinated with it. Myself being a recovering drug addict and alcoholic, it's fascinating, but I have to say that I watched a guy, and I'm concerned for him. I don't know why he's sitting in a hotel room with a bottle of Absolut. I don't know why that is. Why does it someone who's behind the camera? Yeah, do the kid a favor. Take the bottle out of the room. We're sitting there watching a guy have a train wreck, have put himself into dangerous situations for what?
Because he's still modeling the cow sills. That's why. The cow sill. You know, he wanted to be a cow sill. That's what the Partridge family is, cow sills.
Is that what it's all about?
Yeah, the cow sills are a very tragic family, Mark.
Well, let's talk about something amazing. Now, Jim and I are in Los Angeles. We're actually in Dr. Laura's studio, which I was nervous about at first, but I don't
You're in her chair.
I think you might be in her chair.
Ooh.
This is an interesting chair, but there's a little Dr. Laura stuff around. There's a little plaque here that says, "Despair is a cheap excuse for avoiding one's purpose in life, and a sense of purpose is the best way to avoid despair." Well, that's optimistic and upbeat, but I consider despair a hobby. I'm all jacked up on nicotine gum and coffee right now. I started drinking the coffee.
Funny enough, there's nothing in here about, you know, too much plastic surgery.
Oh, yeah. That happens out here. Did you read that piece about that horrible situation, speaking of plastic surgery, about this Brazilian doctor and his wife? They were indicted for manslaughter charges stemming from the death of a 24-year-old woman during liposuction conducted in their condominium basement.
Wow.
Look, first of all, liposuction is dangerous. And if you watch the process, I've seen it on HBO, on how they do it. But who the hell would say, I'm looking into this, and you see an ad, we're on a bulletin board at a bus station that says we're doing liposuction in the basement of my condominium. This seems like a good deal. I mean, what kind of person would volunteer for that? They had a massage table set up in the basement, and who the hell knows what kind of tools they had or what they were using? I'm just saying that if you're out there and you're considering indulging your vanity and spending a few bucks on breast augmentation or liposuction, make sure the office isn't in a condominium basement, and there is at least some indication that you might be dealing with even a marginal medical practice.
Yeah.
An office space is usually the indication that it would be nice if there was at least a fake diploma on the wall. But if someone's leading you into a basement and telling you, like, hey, keep it down, don't let anyone see you, just come down. You know, if the instructions for the liposuction are meet me around back, if there's any of that stuff, I wouldn't go in for it. Now, what I was going to talk about on the way over here, we do live in California, and we drove over. I was driving over here about 4:30 in the morning, and I experienced something that you rarely experience in California, which is I could actually move on the highways. Yet when you drive at night or in the middle of the night, as I did coming in here, and you realize, like, this is a great highway system if you can actually drive on it.
Sure, like 40 years ago.
Well, that's the thing I'm saying. If there's anybody out there, now we're going to talk a little bit about, you bought yourself a grease car.
Yeah, well, actually, my girlfriend Heather did, yeah. Grease car. Yeah.
And when I start thinking about global warming, when I hear the right or anyone's criticism of the science or the ideas around global warming, all you got to do is spend a little time in Los Angeles, and you realize when you're sitting on the highway and you're sitting there behind a line of traffic that doesn't look like it's ever going to end, there is no doubt that there is global warming. There is no doubt where that global warming comes from. And I understand road rage. I never thought I would, but I do. I understand it. It's the same thing that happens when people snap at the post office. There's something about being stuck in traffic. There's an existential moment where you realize this is never going to end. Yeah. And I'm not talking about that day or that moment or your life in terms of traffic, but there is no solution to this. They're only building more cars. The appetite for oil only becomes larger. There is no way global warming is a myth, and there's no way there's no way out of it. What are they going to start building highways on top of highways? To restructure the infrastructure is going to take forever, but it's something that has to be done around energy resources and around how we get around.
Bring back the red cars.
What are the red cars?
The red car, they used to have a trolley system here in L.A. Everybody got around by that. You know, the red cars where all the freeways were. They should be put, you know, right smack down the 5 and the 101 and the 134. There should, in the 5, yeah, there should be a red car system.
Well, I can't see how sprawl is going to help the energy resources problem. And then you have George Bush out there talking about Iraq and talking about how we're winning there and talking. I think what he did yesterday in terms of what he said about Iraq is he sort of fell on the grenade politically, I believe. What he's saying, and he's done this before, now that he is a lame duck and now that his approval rating is somewhere in the low 30s. Yeah, hopefully it'll get down to the high 20s, only in the sense that I think what he does now is he plays to that delusional core, which is very small right now, but they don't want to lose the delusional core. You know, there's all these things you hear about the FEMA building mysterious incarceration camps. I think that if we change the House and hopefully change the president in a few years, that they should be used for these people that at this point in time are still believing in this president, in the sense that because those people are dangerous to society, they're clearly delusional, they're unmedicated, they really need help, and they should probably be put away somewhere.
If they really believe that much, they should go to Guantanamo. Stay there.
They can stay adjacent to the terrorists that may not be terrorists, but are at least staying there indefinitely. But what I was talking about now, in terms of energy, in terms of Bush mentioning that what needs to be done in Iraq is to protect the oil resources. You've got a month here in Iraq where almost 100 American soldiers were killed. Just the other night, yesterday or last night, there were 60 civilians killed in Afghanistan, which was the beginning of what is now looking like a broad, unfinished war. Now, let's say they consolidate the oil. Let's say that they take care of that. How does that solve any problems? And would that be worth it to some Americans in this country who believe that our resources are other people's resources, and if we go in and get them, they are ours? So let's say that in 6 months to a year that the president says, look, we've consolidated the oil resources. We protected them in Iraq. We have now tapped into that. Oil prices are going to be $2 a gallon, $1.50 a gallon. They're going to drop down. Would that make this war worthwhile? Would you be willing to say that all that other crap about weapons of mass destruction and the idea that we're protecting the world against terrorism, which turns the opposite is true, would all that be worth it if those oil prices went down and we were able to tap that well in a safe sense? Would it be worth it to you? In a second, we're going to talk about Jim's grease car, because I want to know if it's practical, if it's fast. We're also going to, later in the show, we're going to talk to Mark Crispin Miller. He is the author of Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election, Why They'll Steal the Next One, Too, Unless We Stop Them. We're going to talk a lot about Ohio in that segment. I know I got a lot of listeners out there who listen to Jerry. This is Mark Maron filling in for Jerry Springer with Jim Merle. It's 18 past the hour.
Jerry Springer.
He is a genuine, patriotic American, and I'm really proud of everything that he has done.
On the radio. How's anybody going to hear if you don't say it? 877-345-3779. 877-34-JERRY. Springer on the radio.
It's Mark Maron here in for Jerry Springer. I'm here with Jim Earle. We're talking about oil. We're talking about alternative fuels. We're about to talk about that a little more. I was asking you people, 877-34-JERRY is the number, if it would be worth it. I have said at the beginning of the Iraq War, I wonder if it would have been interesting if George Bush presented his desire to go into Iraq instead of saying they're weapons of mass, instead of lying about weapons of mass destruction, instead of lying about the idea that this would make the world safer, if he were just to have said, look, we're going in, it's a very aggressive new business idea that I have, it's just a business plan, I've got a mission statement about the new corporation that will be the Iraq War, and we're hoping that we can really suck some oil and protect that asset, that global asset, which will become ours, and tap that well. Millions and millions of crude, barrels of crude under Iraq. And would that be worth it? Would it be worth it? I mean, looking at what happens, I just wonder about some Americans and the level of their denial about what is really going on there and if it would change. I imagine it would over time. I am happy that people are starting to wake up to the realities of what's really going on there and how this president is handling it. The way he's handling it now is he's basically giving Republicans who are running for Senate or for the Congress the right to not align themselves with him by saying, hey, I'm sticking by this. I know it's difficult. We're willing to make no concessions, but we're trying to adapt. But I'm staying. We're winning. We're staying the course. It's going to take a long time. This is how I feel. I know people disagree with me. By suggesting that people disagree with me, he's saying, look, if you have to, do what you got to do. I'm a lame duck. I realize that, but I got to hold on to these delusional people that still believe in me. Now, what I want to know from you people, 877-34-JERRY is the number. Would it be worth it? ultimately, the war, if we were to get that oil without any problem, if we were to secure that oil. Now, Jim, I want to hear about the Greece card. Now, what? How, see, I picture maybe I'm primitive. You're a girlfriend.
Very primitive.
Yeah, okay. Your girlfriend, Heather, bought a Greece car. Now, I always thought that this, see, I'm backward in the sense that.
Actually, she bought a diesel car.
Okay.
Which, you know, diesel, Adolf Diesel originally planned to have all diesels run on oil.
Yeah.
You know, like walnut oil.
Walnut oil?
Yeah, walnut oil. That's what biodiesel is, essentially, mostly walnut oil.
I thought biodiesel, it's not ethanol, it's not...
It's got a little ethanol in it or other additives, so it's not entirely oil. You can run a diesel on pure oil if you have a good filter in it.
Wait, walnut oil, like, walnut are kind of, that's kind of a pricey dessert nut. Does it have a fragrance?
It smells like if you're ever behind a biodiesel car, it smells like somebody's cooking walnuts, and you're getting a nice whiff of omega 3 fatty acids as well. Suck on that tailpipe.
But so you get your mouth around that tailpipe, and you can get yourself some of that good cholesterol.
That's right.
You lower your numbers a little bit.
Absolutely,
that's
Mark.
That's tremendous.
I recommend it.
Now is there a problem filling it up? See, this is the big question that Americans have. It's like a grease car. That's
going to be too much trouble. I might have to go a little extra, a little further in my car. And I don't know if I could get out of my car. But that's too much trouble. Because I'm a big, fat, dumb American.
No, but what do you have to do? I have no idea. To me, it's...
No problem. It's very convenient. We have to drive 3 hours to Ventura. Fill up this guy's farm.
Yeah.
With this guy with one tooth. And he says, come on in. We got some oil.
You're lying to me.
There's just, you know, there are only like two biodiesel outlets in L.A., I'm surprised.
But there should be more.
Yeah, there should be. Of course there should be. See, it's a huge business.
That's the discussion of the paradigm shift. This is a product that can be made in America. There's a lot of places in the Midwest that are starting to produce ethanol. This could bring jobs back to this country. Could be investments back to this country. We just have to convince the leaders in charge of running around, completely destroying civilizations in order to get this crude oil.
Yeah.
How are you going to shift that old boys network crude oil paradigm?
We convince them that they can actually make it and sell it to us for incredibly high prices and monopolize
it. Stretch.
You see?
Yeah.
And then it'll be fine. It'll be just like oil. But this grease car, it's an 85 Mercedes diesel. And those things are indestructible. They can go for 900,000 miles. Now, Adolf Diesel meant for all diesels to be run on oil.
Right.
And you can run diesels on pure oil. You don't have to get biodiesel. That's a crock, too. But it's easier to do that
so,
at the moment.
Okay, now, after they fix it, we're gonna continue talking about this. But after they rejigger that Mercedes.
Yeah, that's the phrase they use.
It can run on either oil or it can run on the biodiesel.
Or diesel.
See that? There's an alternative. All you got to do now is find yourself an 80s model diesel Mercedes.
There's 15 years of Mercedes.
All right. So you got to find yourself one of those and sacrifice your pride a little bit, because even when diesel Mercedes were around, you're sort of like, oh, it's a diesel. That thing's got no juice. How are we going to not want the juice? That's the thing about us. We like the juice. We'll be back. Mark Maron in for Springer. 877-34-JERRY is the number.
Email Jerry at SpringerOnTheRadio.com.
Jerry Springer
on the radio.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
You can join our conversation at 1-877-34-JERRY. That's 1-877-345-3779. Right now, let's send it to Gerald Freermong for Crop News.
And now, Springer on the Radio brings you up to date with the latest from Crop News. Whenever important news affects you, Crop News is there with other stories to distract you. Now, Here's Crack Croc News reporter, Gerald Fearmong.
I'm Gerald Fearmong, Croc News. The government of Iraq. Yes, there is one. Shut up. The government of Iraq has agreed to a timetable for the withdrawal of American troops. Unfortunately, the timetable comes from Amtrak, so it's already running late. It could derail at any moment, and the food is just horrible. As Election Day nears, political ads get nastier. According to the TV, this year's choice is apparently between tax raisers and child molesters. Candidates no longer bother to say anything good about themselves, only bad things about their opponents. George Bush, who originally ran on the platform of restoring civility to American politics, says, "Mission accomplished, stay the course." Stay the course has been officially dropped from the administration's lexicon. A new phrase is being sought to better show the flexibility of planning in Iraq. New phrases being considered include season to taste, whip until firm, discard if seal is broken, and sold for the prevention of disease only. Elvis Presley is no longer the king of posthumous income. The highest-earning dead celebrity is now grunge rocker Kurt Cobain. Accordingly, Cobain's former home has been renamed Grungeland, and the daughter he had with Courtney Love will soon be marrying one of Michael Jackson's kids. As if they're his kids, right? Stay tuned to Croc News. We might not always be accurate, but at least we're not rigged like that Dancing with the Stars show. I'm Gerald Fearmong, Croc News.
Jerry Springer on the radio.
All right, Mark Maron in for Springer. I got my buddy Jim Earle here. Jimmy Earle in studio. The man who's got a grease car. I am a lazy progressive. I didn't even buy a Prius. But we're talking about alternative fuels. We're talking about when you look at a day or a month like October in Iraq, where you're seeing almost 100 American soldiers killed in Iraq. You're seeing, you know, thousands of civilians. You see people, 60 people killed in Afghanistan. Now, if we are to understand, if you are going to simplify this war as a war for oil, if we're going to say all the other stuff is crap, is it really worth it to anybody that this is the case? And not just in terms of human lives, but in terms of how the world functions. I've got some mystical ideas about the revenge of the dinosaurs, that, you know, what we're tapping into probably shouldn't have been tapped into to begin with. Because just by opening that first well, Jim, whenever that first well was opened, we opened the Pandora's box that's going to envelop this planet in carbon smoke. The petroleum-based paradigm really has to go, and it will go if there's going to be anybody surviving on this planet. Not going to be in the next generation. Could start now. Could start if people listen to Al Gore, and he was successfully making climate change as frightening, if not more so, than terrorism.
Oh, it's going to all end up like the Omega Man.
Oh, man, I haven't seen that. I've seen Soylent Green. Can we talk about the Omega Man in a second? Let's talk we're going to Jim, right? Marengo, Illinois. How are you, Jim?
Jim from Marengo?
Yeah.
Hey, you guys are doing the doom and gloom thing, talking about oil and stuff. If you pick up the latest issue of Auto Week magazine, they're doing test drives of fuel cell vehicles.
Great.
One is coming out from GM. They're looking at bringing it out in 2008, 2009, and the other is from Honda. Now, these are all strictly fuel cell vehicles running on hydrogen, and they're going to get 300 miles off a tank of hydrogen.
Do they go fast, Jim? Do they go fast?
They will do 90 miles an hour.
90.
So I mean that'll work on tollways.
Yeah, I think like there seems to be a couple technologies out there. There's this hydrogen fuel cell, and there's also electric cars. It seems to me that the president, for reasons of I'm sure business in terms of hydrogen fuel cells, is leaning towards that, even though it's a more expensive and less perfected technology. But I think it's great.
The technology is there. They've run it in space for decades. And the thing that really was interesting in this article is that both GM and Honda, because the biggest problem with hydrogen is, oh, we don't have the infrastructure. How are people going to fuel their vehicles?
Right.
Well, they're coming up with home chargers. The hydrogen, you put the hydrogen charger in your garage. GM is looking into doing one that runs off of natural gas. and the other one plugs into your wall and works off of electricity, while Honda is just developing a natural gas regenerator. But, I mean, for 300 miles, people can use these to commute. And, my God, how much hydrocarbons would we not be burning?
Wouldn't it be amazing? I don't know what.
And we wouldn't have to worry about the Middle East.
That's we could just put a – we wouldn't have to even go there. Thank you very much for your call, Jim. Now, we had to
Are these hydrogen cars, aren't they costing like $3 million a piece, though? I mean
– Yeah, so they're only going to be affordable to the upper 1%, and of course they wouldn't have to pay tax on anything in terms of buying the car, keeping the car, or using the hydrogen. They'll probably get a free package. Now, the idea is that these are prototypes. I mean, $3 million is a little steep, I think, for most people. But, you know, this is the way that some people think that I never knew how to think. But just dealing with, like, the housing market today, that people are buying, you know, regular families are buying million-dollar houses because of the nature of debt. They think, like, what, the car's $3 million? Well, can I get a no-money-down loan on that? Then mm-hmm. I'll take it. It's only $200 a month of payments for the rest of my life if I live, and then my kids get those payments. So I can do that. I think that's a reasonable amount of debt to carry. But it seems that the electric car, I'm questioning the integrity of why the government is supporting the hydrogen model, because I know Bush is supporting that. There's obviously some
big delay, and it costs a lot more.
Big delay, and it costs a lot more, and obviously there are backroom deals being made with natural gas industry, with the hydrogen industry, if there be a hydrogen industry. I just would like to see the paperwork on that particular deal. But I know the electric car works. I know. I mean,
the Doble steam car in 1924 could go 2,400 miles on a tank of water.
We cannot talk about steam.
You know, it's like 10 to 14 miles to the gallon of oil. But, you know, that the Doble steam car also weighed like twice as much as the average car now.
But how come I just picture this contraption like
0 to 75 in 10 seconds, I think.
All right, we're going to take a couple more calls. We are talking about alternative fuels. I don't see this as gloom and doom. I don't know why he had that's how I am. I take that personally. So it's you guys are doing the gloom and doom thing. Sorry for trying to pierce the wall of denial that we all walk around with.
Yeah, that's right. And the Omega Man had a happy ending. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, so Soylent Green, not funny, unless you like those kind of crackers. You know, it's better. See, that's what people would rather not know. 877-34-JERRY, you know the topic. We're talking about alternative fuels. We're talking about gloom and doom, about the inevitable end of the world if we keep suffocating ourselves with the fumes of petroleum. It is now 41 past the hour.
We promise Jerry won't steal your comments and ideas from your emails.
Much.
Jerry@springeronTheRadio.com. Your opinion expressed when calling Jerry at 877-345-3779 will be kept confidential.
All our calls are being monitored. Got that?
Oh, never mind. Jerry Springer on the radio.
Springer on Air America Radio.
All right, it's Mark Maron in for Jerry Springer. Springer's doing his television show or dancing or being an international traveler, as he is. I'm here with Jim Earle, my buddy. We are sitting here taking calls at 877-34-JERRY. We're talking about alternative fuels, which to some people means gloom and doom. This should be the conversation. The entire conversation around these upcoming elections should really it should be around Iraq. It should be around climate change. It should be around health care. But I really respect, honestly, I'm a denial guy. Yeah, I will stay in denial. I enjoy denial. I think denial is it protects me from the truths that I can't quite handle yet, and I need things to break through that wall of denial. Now, whether or not the inconvenient truth, the film with Al Gore, whether or not it was a powerful movie or whether or not I could have gotten that information anywhere, I respect a guy like Al Gore, who I think will run for president, despite the fact that he's not saying anything, for really bringing it to people's attention. You can say whatever you want. It's like, it's not going to happen in my lifetime, even if you're progressive. It's not going to happen in my lifetime. We're not all going to die. I still don't know what it's going to take people to go to the doctor on this one, to understand that there might really be something wrong. I don't think that we all need to wake up one morning and not be able to breathe at the same time to realize that maybe we could make a few small changes. We are talking about alternative fuels. 877-34-JERRY is the number. Scott in Miami, how are you? Scott, you there? Hey, Scott. No good.
There
no
you
good.
Are.
Hey, right. Scott, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's up, man?
I just have to tell you that when I heard your music come in of the Chili Peppers,
it was
like I was coming out of a coma. it was like I was awakening in this new world of I don't know, I can't explain it.
It's the old morning sedition music.
When I hear that music, sometimes I get a little crazy, and I think about the days of old, and I get a little tear in my eye. But today.
Oh.
I'm having a wonderful day, thanks to you and Mr. Earl.
Oh, well, thank you.
If there's any way that you can invite, you know, the Cardinal on or some of those guys that came around, you know, that would be incredible.
Well, I think Mort Mortensen's going to be in later in the show. Maybe we'll get somebody else in tomorrow. We'll have to make some calls.
Does he have Sammy in his pocket?
I don't know. We might have a Sammy. We're only going to be doing the show for a couple of days, but there will come a time, my friend. There will come a time where I will re-enter the world of radio in a legitimate way, not just guest hosting, which is legitimate, and I'm happy to be here. But we're working on it, Scott. We're going to find a place for all those characters.
I'll be there in a totally non-stalker fashion.
I don't mind stalkers. thanks for calling, Scott.
Thanks a lot.
I've always said that if you have a stalker, the best thing to do is take them out to lunch. Because you will disappoint them. Stalkers of any sort have got you up on a pedestal, even if in your personal life, even in the office, the obsessive guy or girl that never stops looking at you, makes you uncomfortable. Just say, hey, you want to go out for coffee? And you will completely disappoint them because they think you're something you aren't, and they'll go away. They'll even resent you after that.
At the very least, you'll get a free lunch out of it, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. If you are a stalker, you'll get a free lunch. Yeah. All right. Well, look, Chad in Chicago. How are you, Chad? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's on your mind, man?
Hey, I'd like to talk about a car that I read about in a Motor Trend magazine a couple months back.
Yeah.
What it is it's called Tesla Motors, a company, I think it's
based
in California, made in Nikola Tesla, you know, the inventor of the electric motor. And it's actually a really nice little performance car. It uses the newer lithium-ion batteries.
Yeah, it's an electric car.
Yeah, electric car, totally electric. It'll do a full charge on off-peak rates of electricity, about $2.50.
Oh, yeah, and it moves, too. And it's
it's based off the Lotus Elise platform, and it's a really light car. It's a nice, good-looking roadster. It'll do 0 to 60 in, like, 4 seconds flat.
And that's from
a range about...
That's from Tesla Motors. Tesla Motors
Tesla
up in the
Motors.
Up in the Bay Area, up in Silicon Valley. Yeah, I think it's a good idea to introduce the world to an electric car that is efficient and fast and can be charged in your garage. But you make it real hot and sporty, so it's real appealing.
Right. I mean, it's not too expensive. I think they're charging about $100,000 for it, and they said it'll probably go down to like $80,000 or $90,000 when like they build a little more, get production going and whatnot.
Yeah. All right, thanks for your call, man. Thanks a lot, Chad. Well, you know, that's the electric car, and that Tesla thing is a hot car, and eventually they'll create SUVs and practical cars. It's just getting people off of that damn nozzle. Just the idea. I mean, some people are like you were saying, like, well, so where do I put this stuff in it? They just can't switch their mind. It's very hard for Americans in general.
We're
stubborn.
Everybody says they hate the oil companies, but they will not do anything. They will not take the right step to get away from them.
Right. Well, I got an interesting story about fat in just a second. It is 51 past the hour. 877-34-JERRY is the number. I'm Mark Maron, 7 for Jerry. We'll be back in a sec.
Jerry Springer.
He's done a heck of a job.
On the radio. Hey. Jerry's talking to you. You can talk back by calling 877-345-3779. That's 877-34-JERRY. Springer on the radio.
Springer on Air America Radio.
All right, Mark Maron in for Jerry Springer. We're talking about alternative fuels. I got a story in front of me here that says that, look, if that the obesity epidemic is, epidemic I call it, like it's a sickness, fat is costing people bread in terms of gas. At recent gas prices at $2.20 a gallon, about $2.2 billion are more than needs to be spent on gas a year because people are fat and making their cars go slower. That's the real deal.
Yeah.
Let's take a call. Jan in Dayton, how are you, Jan?
Hey there, how are you?
I'm pretty good. What's going on?
Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
I was so happy this morning. I read your email. And I almost spit my coffee out. I'm like, oh, hot damn.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, welcome.
Thank you so much. And so you're over there in Dayton. I haven't been on the air in a while there.
Not since the middle of the night show from Los Angeles, which was a drag.
What kind of car are you driving, Jen?
I have an old car. I have an old car because I'm holding out for a better hybrid.
Oh, really? So you're going to wait for the – that's a good plan because now they're pretty expensive. They're hard to get. I'd like to think I'm holding out too, but I bought a four-cylinder Camry, which is pretty good.
Well, Camrys are all right, but around here in the Midwest, you have to get in line to get a Prius, and also you have to get in line. You have to wait.
Yeah.
And then you have to pay about $35,000-$40,000, and that's I teach school, so.
Although you should be making more than anybody, you make as less than anybody.
Well, yeah, but that's the real deal. It's not a lot of money, and that's about 3 years' salary. So
I'm so
thrilled. When you should put out an email and tell everybody how to get on, because you can stream off of. WSAI and Cincinnati.
Okay, all right. I'll send one out tonight, Jen.
Thrilling. Thanks, you guys.
Yeah,
made
you
my
bet.
Day. I miss you.
Oh, I miss you, too. Thanks thanks for calling. When we get back after the top of the hour here, Mark Crispin Miller, author of Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One Unless We Stop Them. Also, we'll take some more calls if you're still hanging on to talk about alternative fuels. We'll continue to talk about that. But look forward to having a conversation about how scary it really is when it's coming down around 50-50 in this country, red and blue, and how easy it is to steal these elections on local levels. We're going to give you a heads up about that. So stick around. Mark Maron in for Jerry. It's 57 past. Jim Earle is with me. Talk to you in a minute.
Jerry Springer, Mark Maron, on the radio.
All right, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course you lurking conservatives. It is Mark Maron in for Jerry Springer. I'm here with my buddy Jim Earle. Some of you might remember him from the old days. Jim Earle, the man with the grease car.
Grease car, that's
Jim
right.
Jim Earle, you got to pull up behind restaurants and go, hey, fellas, you got any old dirty French fry later grease I can put in my machine?
Yeah, not if Schwarzenegger outlaws that, too, huh?
Is he thinking about doing that?
You know, people are, you know, some restaurants are saying, there's a health law. We can't really give it away anymore because we have, you know, have a permit to pick it up, a toxic waste permit to pick up
to pick
waste
up grease?
Oil.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
So that's another, you know, impediment.
That, you know what, the state could probably, if somebody was creative and not frightened and operating at the behest of big oil companies, they could figure out a way for the state to make a few bucks on that. And maybe even let the restaurant owners make a few bucks on that. Make a little money off of people eating those bad fats. They should make, as I said before in this article, now folks, I'm going to have to switch gears here in a minute. I will tell you that. because Mark Crispin Miller is serious business. And there's a lot of problems around the country in terms of tallying the vote, in terms of obstructing the vote, in terms of whether or not people will be allowed to vote. This is what it all trickles down to. It's just people at a voting center or at a polling center sitting there going, I don't know what's wrong with the machine. Is somebody coming from the machine place? That's really where democracy gets all messed up, and for a number of reasons. We are going to talk to Mark Crispin Miller, the author of Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election, and why they will steal the next one, too, unless we stop them. But we are going to finish up on these alternative fuels, because I believe they should make a car that's fueled by fat. That seems to be the only solution, Jim.
Liposuction the fat, people. Put that in your cars, the grease burners.
Safely do it, though. Maybe you could do it. Maybe there could be some sort of hookup that this seems to be some sort of futuristic interface that one could stick on their fat belly.
Right.
And just plug into something inside the car.
Absolutely.
Like once a week, you basically liposuction yourself. It's going to be safer than a basement in Massachusetts where these people are now being tried for murder for doing liposuction in their basement.
You have a catheter in your SUV, right? Why not just retool it to liposuction your waist fat right into the tank?
That's all I'm saying. Is that too much to ask for? They can't create this kind of technology. It'll be messy at first. It'll be awkward. There'll be deaths probably because the suction hole's infected. Yeah, but that stuff will happen.
If we can land on the moon, Mark, we can certainly stick a liposuction tube into our abdominal cavity in fuel or diesel cars.
And people won't have to do that dreaded exercise that so many people hate to do. I'll tell you though, it does become a chore.
Walking the half block to Alpha Beta.
Yeah,
to pick up your waffles.
And to get some donuts. All right, let's take a couple more calls while they're still on the phone. Dave in Detroit, are you there? Dave, how are you?
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I just wanted to call about electric cars. I mean, I really think they're the future because you can produce electricity any multitude of ways by wind, solar, you know, geothermal, nuclear, even coal, and still drive the electric car. I mean, it's the most efficient. It's more efficient than hydrogen, more efficient than gasoline.
I guess the big question, Dave, ultimately is it going to make enough people money that some legislators can get behind it? It seems like I agree with you. The electric car is the most practical way to do this. We can just plug them in our garage, charge them up. They'll probably run forever. They probably won't need that much service.
There's only one moving part in the whole car. There's like 10,000 fewer parts, so it's cheaper to produce. And like you said, though, the only problem is the money aspect. Right now, I mean, in fact, I believe California has that CARB mandate for zero-emission vehicles.
Yep.
And the car companies, along with the U.S. government, are fighting that again. They're in court right now, I believe, fighting the California law again, the CARB mandate to produce zero-emission vehicles in the next few years. And while they had that back in the around 2000 in the 90s when they did produce actual electric cars, they said, well, we're going to make hydrogen cars, which are way less efficient than pure electric cars.
That's right. And as Jim said, take a lot longer to develop. Thanks a lot for your call, Dave. That's the thing, is that if you make an electric car, if you make it something that won't break, you can't apply the idea of planned obsolescence to a product that people will pay a lot of money for, they're not going to the big companies and the government aren't going to get behind it because that's who they work for.
Service stations and oil changes and all the dealerships that make all their money not selling the cars but actually servicing the cars over months and months and months.
That's right. You might even be able to service it yourself. I mean, I'm no mechanic, but boy, if it's only got a few moving parts, I could probably figure it out. Like, well, that's that one part there looks like it's broken, as opposed to right now, I don't even know how the hell my Camry works. Apparently, in most cars now, they've got everything is mediated by the electrical system of the car. Here's what I'm saying. And planned obsolescence.
The chip.
Right. Plans obsolescence, by the way. I don't want to just throw that out there without people knowing what it is. I'm sure most of you do. But if you don't, it doesn't make any difference. It's something that I was obsessed with at one point in time. Planned obsolescence is basically the fact that they design things either to go out of style, to become useless, or just become outdated. They design things so you'll buy the same thing in an updated model a few years later. Or they design a technology that will outdate itself just to, you know, turn over. More of your money. Ultimately, the big question is going to be, and I'm no socialist, but the big question is going to be, what is more important, the survival of the free market or the survival of the human race? That's going to be the big question. And as I was just saying that with the Camry, that right now when I push the gas, it doesn't just go to a lever that releases gas into the carburetor. It goes to a machine that decides whether or not the gas pedal is being pushed and whether or not it's me pushing it because it's starting to know my style of driving and how much gas to release. That's completely unnecessary. All that means, and it doesn't drive that well either, is that that's one more thing that's going to be more complicated to fix. And I got nothing against Toyota, but I think this was a little bit unnecessary.
Well, yes, and then you push that pedal and it's... goes to that chip that has your name and all your personal health information on it, too.
Well, that's the one they put in my head when I went under for oral surgery.
Really? I have mine in my scrotum.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Montgomery Ward's planted a chip in my scrotum.
Did you ask for that, or is that comes...
I was a preferred customer.
Wow. I had no idea that was an option. But I'm not sure I would have taken that option. Let's go to Tony in Park Ridge, Illinois. Tony, you there still?
Yes, I am.
What's on your mind, bro?
I just wanted to say with... a lot of talk about the environment. I'm a college student, and I'm politically active, and I try to get my fellow students politically active, and I find it very hard.
Oh, my God. No kidding. I don't know how to get kids, and I don't
I've gotten over 40 people to vote for John Lash in his district, students of Northern Illinois University, by giving them cigarettes.
So, really?
I don't smoke, but anyways. The inherent problem I found is the same way Republicans take the word liberal and make it an evil way is the same way they take environmentalists. They take it and you hippie, you know, you love the environment. It's like almost like, you know, you're obstructing the open free market and.
Right, right. Well, that's the deal. The liberal frame, they're using it again with, like, calling Nancy Pelosi a San Francisco liberal. These words are empty at this point in time because all they're doing is slandering. They're drawing on old frames. They're making people, they're trying to connect. All they do is they try to connect people to the 60s or they try to connect people to Bill Clinton. It's all about blame. They got nothing to stand on. And all they stand for is big business and, you know, just an unstoppable or that's unimpeded market force. But the question that you bring up that I think is important that we're going to talk to my next guest about in terms of activating young people, you know, how do you get young people to really understand that this stuff is important, that politics is important? It's hard enough to get me to realize it, but how do you're on the college campus. What is important to these kids?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the kids I know, mommy and daddy pays for everything. They're in their comfortable bubble, and they don't see outside of the campus. They see beer and alcohol and cigarettes, and that's all they care about. If the price of beer goes up, they're going to raise hell. But,
having sex.
And condoms are free, so, I mean, free love. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, if you can get it. Yeah. Well, I appreciate your call, and I appreciate also that you are trying to reach out because I know it's not an easy game to be the guy on campus who's like, this is important, people. This is stuff that we should be thinking about. Because unless the entire culture is going in that direction, like when I was in college, when Reagan was in office, and things like Earth Day mobilized people, and like just the resentment towards Reagan mobilized people. But it seems that they've got a lot of these kids distracted with their cell phones, with their MySpace, with their YouTube, free condoms, cigarettes, beer, taking classes that ultimately aren't important, getting themselves into debt, that it's all very immediate to them, and they can't look at the big picture. And I don't know how to make that. I'll tell you, if this administration was stupid enough to reinstate the draft, that would certainly mobilize the kids. But thanks for your call. I appreciate it. In a second, we're going to talk to Mark Crispin Miller. And don't misunderstand me. I certainly don't want them to reinstate the draft. But there are some discussions about in the future if everybody had to do some sort of civic service in terms of just educating themselves, preparing themselves, being trained for a few months in how the government works. I mean, on a day-to-day basis, Jim, I barely understand it. I try to understand it. It is confusing. It's a little complicated. It's not inherently sexy. It's hard to believe in your politicians because you realize that give them a couple years, they'll compromise, they'll sell themselves out, they'll prostitute their beliefs in the name of big business. I think that is the most difficult thing right now is that in terms of Republicans and Democrats, is it's clear that the Republicans have botched a lot of stuff up. And God willing, it looks like we're going to get a Democratic House. And the only thing that House can start to do initially is try to re-legislate, try to undo the damage that the Republican Party, or whatever you want to call it at this point, has done to the working people of this country in terms of bankruptcy legislation, in terms of stifling the ability to get health care, in terms of creating legislation to protect corporations from lawsuits. There are any number of ways that that this Republican Party has destroyed the capacity for working people to be on a level playing field with other people. Taxation. But the most important thing is really voting and protecting the vote, which really, as you hear more and more, is the least protected, whether it's a machine, uninformed or uneducated poll workers. The inability, they can't get kids to work at these places. A lot of the people, I'm not saying anything negative about older people, but you got a lot of people who are working these polling centers that were used to the old machines and no one's training them. And on top of that, the machines are hackable, redistricting and scrapping the voter polls, the voter rolls. Purging the rolls is commonplace in some states. We're going to talk to Mark Crispin Miller, who is an author. He's also a college professor, a media critic, the author of Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election, and Why They'll Steal the Next One, Too, Unless We Stop Them, in just a second. And we will take calls with Professor Miller. So stick around. It's 19 past. I'm Mark Maron.
Jerry Springer, the voice of reason.
That is something I've said repeatedly from this podium, and it seems not to sink in. Why?
On the radio. It's worth it. Keep trying. 877-345-3779 is 877-34-JERRY. Springer on the radio.
Springer on Air America Radio.
All right, folks, Mark Maron in for Jerry Springer. I got my buddy Jimmy Earle over there.
Yeah.
There are many problems with the electoral system, folks, and the voting mechanics of this country, and it should be of major concern to everyone if it's not already. It is a reality that the vote can be stolen, can be stopped, can be uncounted, can be changed in a number of ways in many states, that machines, creative redistricting and also voter roll purges are some of the tactics used. Mark Crispin Miller is the author of the Bush Dyslexicon, Observations on a National Disorder. He's the author of Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One, Too, Unless We Stop Them. Also the author of Cruel and Unusual, Bush and Cheney's New World Order. He's an outspoken critic of this administration, and he's with us today to help. How are you, Mark Crispin Miller?
Hey, Mark. Good to hear your voice.
Well, it's great to hear you, man. And, you know, we got a couple of minutes here before we go into a pretty long break. So I want to start this. I just got off the phone with a guy who was trying to spread the message on college campuses, trying to get young people involved. You've got to talk to young people on at least a biweekly level in your classes. What is it that is stopping them from getting them involved?
Well, the fact is I think a lot of them feel that there's no point to it because there's this myth. You may have heard this rumor,
yeah,
this myth, that the Republicans won the last election. this is not true.
Yeah.
I think when people – well, I don't think. I know that when
yes.
people find out that their voting rights have basically been taken away from them, they understand that it is crucial to come out on Election Day as a protest on behalf of free and fair elections. This is crucial. The higher the turnout on Election Day – the harder it will be for the Republicans to spin their next amazing victory as legitimate. And I'll, after the break, I'll talk about what, the signs that are pointing toward another theft.
So you're saying that young people today, and you know, and I got to be honest with you, I was young, I was one of these young people. I don't think I became politically activated until I had to, in terms of having to learn about what was important much later in life, after college. And I think one of the reasons was a type of apathy that leads people, young people, to believe that what the hell difference does it make?
That's
for
right.
for whatever reason.
Well, that's right, and you know, I think people suspect what's at stake here, but not enough voices in the media are telling them what's at stake. What's at stake is the survival of the planet. What's at stake is our liberty as men and women in this once upon a time republic. What's at stake is reproductive freedom. What's at stake is the state of the environment. You know, everything's at stake, and above all, American democracy is at stake. Now, you know, you and I, or maybe just I, had to contend with the draft once upon a time. I know you mentioned that before. That's a clear and present threat to people's freedom, and it did mobilize a lot of kids to go out and protest. Well, you know, there's no telling what this administration will come down with after they have won, unquote, yet again. They're going to have to institute a draft, because they have a program of endless war. And so I think the best way that kids can understand that their own future is at stake, you know, economic, physical, you name it, is for them to see that they've got to help us reclaim our voting rights. And I have to say, Mark, that, you know, I do talk to kids a lot, and they respond passionately to this pitch. The fact is they haven't heard what's going on, you know?
Now, right now, you know, as we're, you know, before we take this break, in terms of just, if you could, off the top of your head, or if you've got something there in front of you, what are the states? Is there a list of states where you see the highest possibility for some malfeasance?
Oh, geez. Well, okay, certainly Ohio, you know, speak of the devil. Ohio, Florida, Maryland, Illinois, California, Pennsylvania, you know, and there, Tennessee, I could go on. I mean,
and that's the thing is, like, you talk about, you know, Pennsylvania and Tennessee. These are crucial because these are heated contests,
right,
for the Senate, specifically for the Senate. And when it's close to 50-50, it's a lot easier for them to steal it, isn't it?
Well, it is.
Well, look, all right, Mark Crispin Miller is on the phone with us. He's the author of Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One. He's got answers. If you got questions, 877-34-JERRY. We're going to talk in depth about these tactics. So stay here with us. We're also, later in the show, we're going to talk to, speaking of the Army, we're going to talk to an Army recruiter in the last hour of the show. All that's coming up here on the Jerry Springer Show. I'm Mark Maron, phoning in for Jerry.
Springer on the radio.
Springer on Air America Radio.
At 1-877-34-JERRY. That's 1-877-345-3779.
On our seventh week of competition, the couple with the lowest score, and therefore leaving right now, Jerry and Kim. They're cheering your name, but I would expect that they're cheering a different Jerry Springer than they thought they knew 7 weeks ago.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and thank you for letting me go home.
You've been a mayor. You're a successful talk show host. How is being a ballroom dancer compared?
Well, I love you. Thank you. This is unbelievable. I hope everyone has a moment in life where...
Can I ask you, Kim?
To these, you know, the truth is, I'm sorry, you know,
Yeah.
That's all right. Go
Let's
for
bring
it.
Out our next guest.
No, no.
Yeah. No chairs.
Yeah. No fights. Yeah.
No. First of all, it's, you know, honestly, thank you for having me. But this show and this floor belongs to people who really can dance. And God bless you guys. You have such great talent. You're going to be the Super Bowl stars of the future.
Let me look. I want a moment, Kim, because I have just loved watching the two of you work together, and you particularly keeping him going. What's it been like for you working with each other?
I've just had so much fun. It has just been absolutely amazing meeting Jerry, and he's just the nicest man I've ever met, and he's really put himself into this competition, and he started not being able to dance at all, and he's been able to do pretty much every dance. So I've just had a ball, and I've been able to meet such a beautiful person.
And for Jerry, for you, what's it been like working with Kim?
Well, we already have the greatest daughter in the world, but if Katie would have a sister, Mickey and I would adopt you. So, you know, we've been covered for that. Yeah.
Did you ever think, when you first took on this competition, that you would make it this far, week seven?
No, I mean, I think it was cruel to keep me on.
I got to ask you, Katie called you a week ago. Your daughter called you a week ago when you were Mr. Matador. Yeah. It wasn't your best performance.
No.
Last night, you did yourself proud. You get a call from Katie last night.
Yes, but she's every week she calls and she says, I love you, but we're coming to take you home.
Well, you know what? Let's send you home in style. How about giving it up for the heart and soul of this show for the past several weeks? Jerry Springer and Kim Johnson, the amazing partner, Kim Johnson.
Jerry Springer on the radio.
All right. Mark Maron in for Jerry Springer. That's Jim Merle over there. Mark Crispin Miller's on the phone.
I told you it was a favorite.
It was a celebration of Jerry there. It is his show, and we are talking about voting, voter fraud, election theft. We are talking to Mark Crispin Miller, who is the author of Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election, and why they will steal it again, steal the next one, too, unless we stop them. All right, Professor Miller, if I can call you that.
You can call me Mark.
Okay, I know, but we're buddies. I like to call you Professor. All right, Mark. I will call you Mark Crispin Miller. Let's start with Ohio, because it seems to me not only does Jerry have a lot of listeners in Ohio, but I think if you can look at a culture of corruption brought to you by a Republican Secretary of State and how politics can be used on every level to undermine the individual's ability to do their basic democratic civic responsibility, it is Ohio. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
The different ways they do it.
Well, Ohio was obviously the pivotal state last time. But what people don't understand, because the press has buried this information, is that the stuff that went down in Ohio went down all over the country. We're talking about the systematic undersupply of working voting machines to Democratic precincts. We're talking about electronic touchscreen machines that flipped people's Democratic votes into Republican votes. We're talking about challenges mounted, people called at home and threatened with arrest if they turn out to vote because they have a couple of outstanding parking tickets. We're talking about between 10% and 20% of the Democratic votes in some counties being inexplicably erased from the rolls, people who had been voting for years, who had registered, turning up and being told, we're sorry, your name's not here. Fill out this provisional ballot or go call this phone number or whatever.
And then they just go throw the provisional ballot in the garbage.
I mean, exactly right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Now, the disenfranchisement was enormous. And if anybody wants, you know, the best overview of this, of what happened there, go read Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s article in the June 15th issue of Rolling Stone. It's a comprehensive overview based on all the best research out there. And he estimates conservatively that Kerry won Ohio by 350,000 votes.
All right. Now, I don't, you know, it's a misconception on behalf of the right, and I think on behalf of some, you know, apathetic, non-political people, that the focusing on the election is somehow sour grapes. But not only have you proved, and many people have proven, you know, Bobby Kennedy, John Conyers, and many people who have looked at the evidence around exit polls and the way this redistricting and the denial of the vote to for any number of ways is a reality. But if you move from Ohio, if you have an ambitious Republican politician, I'm going to leave it Republican now because they're the ones in power, who wants to do this kind of stuff, a Secretary of State, you know, even a state senator, even somebody on the voting board, they can start to create the machine that will eradicate votes, that will change votes, and it's really not that big of a problem for them to do that.
No, it's quite easy. Ohio, you've got a particularly egregious example. Ken Blackwell was co-chair of the Bush-Cheney campaign and also the top civil servant responsible for maintaining the election system. You had the same situation in Florida in 2000. In 2004, you had the same situation in Arizona. You had a very similar situation in Minnesota. This, at the very least, this kind of thing, having political activists double up as secretaries of state, this should definitely be illegal. But let's talk about more about Ohio. As bad as it was 2 years ago, Mark, it's worse now. For one thing, there are going to be many more electronic touchscreen machines and computerized optical scanners. This equipment is manufactured by companies with close ties to the Republican Party. Nationwide, now 80% of the vote next month is going to be either cast on or counted by computerized equipment that simply cannot be monitored.
Okay? All right, hold that thought, Mark, because we're going to take another break. We're going to take some calls. You can stay with us, right?
Yeah.
Oh, great. 877-34-JERRY. We're talking about a reality, folks, and we need to talk about how we can take action around this on a nationwide level, because if it's running at 45 to 55, 50-50, a little bit undecided in the middle, this becomes very easy with a series of phone calls and maneuvers to throw an entire state election or a national election. Our guest is Mark Crispin Miller. It's 41 past the hour. 877-34-JERRY is the number.
He may read it on the air, or he may read it on... But he'll read it. Email Jerry at SpringerOnTheRadio.com.
Call us now.
877-345-3779. 877-34-JERRY. Springer on the radio.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
It's about 45 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. I'm here with Jim Earle. Our guest on the phone is Mark Crispin Miller. We all here under the umbrella of the Jerry Springer Show, who I'm filling in for because he's doing other things. We are talking about voter fraud. We are talking about election mechanics, specifically in Ohio. Okay, now Mark Crispin Miller, who is the author of Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2000 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One, Too. Now, right now, Brown and DeWine are in Ohio. The margin that the Democrat Sherrod Brown is ahead yesterday was around 11 points.
Right.
How that closes or expands in the next couple weeks. Now, is that a type of lead that can be dissipated by some of the tactics that you're talking about?
Look, Mark, the way it's set up now, people have to understand we're in a whole new universe of election fraud with this kind of technological advantage that you have through computerized machines. They can very easily overcome that lead. Their problem is not overcoming the lead. Logistically, that's in the bag. The problem is coming up with a plausible rationale to explain why it happened. Do you follow me? That's the main thing. That's why Bush keeps talking about terror. That's why he keeps talking about the war. That's why he had his press conference. Understand something about this administration. They don't care if people vote for them or not, okay? They are indifferent to the will of the electorate. It is, in fact, a myth that it was all that close in 2004. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's very credible evidence that Kerry won that last election or would have won by some 8 to 10 million votes. but it's very easy to, you know, you take a little bit here, you take a little bit there. You use all these different methods so that people's, you know, attempts to vote aren't even reflected in the turnout figures. I mean, if thousands and thousands of people were kept waiting online all throughout the country and they had to leave at the rate of, like, you know, 40 an hour because they had to go to work, those people, you know, their attempts to vote aren't reflected in the turnout figures. If,
right.
If thousands of people turn up and they're told, you're not on the rolls, you know, so we were told that the turnout last time was 60.7%. That's actually pretty high in American terms. I believe it was probably closer to 80%.
All right, Mark, let's take a call. All this, that's what makes me scared is when you got George Bush and you got Karl Rove saying they're confident, they're smug,
that's right.
They're not worried, because you're saying to me on some level, though I'm speaking metaphorically, Karl Rove could have a reset button for every Diebold machine in the country.
It amounts to that.
All right, let's talk to Krista in Tempe, Arizona. Is this Krista? Krista, how are you?
Good. How are you, Mark?
Nice to see you. Nice to talk to you. Jim's here. Say hi to Jim.
Yeah. Hi, Jim. Hi,
hey.
Mark. The Morning Seditionist blog, I'll give you a big furry hug.
Oh, that's sweet.
We miss you so much.
Well, thank you. You got a question for Mark Crispin Miller?
Yes, I do. I was a poll worker in the primary, and I'm going to be a poll worker in this one. I don't know. It didn't really seem like the last election was my first election, and it didn't really seem like there was much that I could do in that position. You know, it seemed like any kind of wrongdoing that might happen would happen, you know, not at the polls.
Right.
All right. Thanks, sir.
And,
thanks,
you know,
Krista. And go ahead. Did you want to finish? Or
yeah, I just wanted to know, you know, is there anything I can do as a poll worker working in the polls? Is there anything I should watch for?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, say hi to everybody for me, Krista. All right. Go ahead.
Yeah,
Mark.
I will.
Okay. I think it's very – see, this time – the people's sensitivity to the problem of fraud is much, much greater, you know, thanks to a lot of people's hard work at the grassroots level. Now it's not going to be so easy to sweep all this stuff under the rug. As a poll worker, you, especially in Arizona, where things are pretty bad, you're quite right that a lot of this stuff doesn't take place, you know, within your site there. But a lot of stuff can go wrong, and you can see it. You can see machines freeze up and break down. You can see, you know, people complaining that the vote has flipped the machine has flipped their vote to the other party. You can see that there aren't enough machines. There's stuff like that. So what you should do is keep a very careful log of voter complaints. And this may sound extreme, but I'd bring a video camera along just on the off chance that something unusual happens to ballots, or somebody comes in to fix a machine and nobody's sent for them. You know, this kind of stuff is really rampant. It's been rampant since 2000. So make sure you keep a log, keep a visual record, and make sure also that people know the phone number 1-866-OUR-VOTE. That's the Election Incident Reporting System. It's a national database set up to field people's complaints. You can see there's about 50,000 entries from 2004. All you have to do is a Google search on EIRS and then type in the name of any city, county, or state in the country, and you'll get an amazing log of voters' experiences, you know, at the grassroots level. It's an invaluable research aid.
Okay. All right, Mark, stay on the phone. We're gonna take a couple more calls after this. I don't understand why the high-tech companies, many of which certainly lean Democratic, don't create a machine that can only be hacked by Democrats. Why can't we start cheating?
Well, first of all, we don't really need to cheat, you know. Not that the Democrats are any great shakes, but they're not the Republicans. And, you know, that's a big advantage. These people have been voting against Bush-Cheney's fascistic system for quite a while.
All right, hold on. I want to let's pick it up on the other side of this break. 1-877-34-JERRY is the number. Mark Crispin Miller is our guest, and this is sobering stuff. It's difficult to hear. It can lead to despair, but don't let it. There is a way around this. We will eventually make this right. Right, Mark? Okay, maybe not. No, he was on hold. So stay with us. We'll be right back. 51 Pass.
It's not going to end the war.
It's certainly not going to end the violence.
Jerry Springer on the radio.
But it's going to help a lot.
Jerry Springer.
Dancing with the stars.
And talking with you on the radio at 877-345-3779. 877-34-JERRY.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Okay, Mark Maron here in for Jerry Springer. I got my buddy Jim with me, Mark Crispin Miller on the phone. The book is Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One, Too, Unless We Stop Them. Maybe we can close it up with this final question. We only got a couple of minutes, but I got someone on the phone from Ohio, Mike in Ross, Ohio. You got a quick question here? Mike? Hello, Mike. Yeah, what do you got? What's your question?
The question is this. I heard that the fact that Minnesota, they got same-day voter registration. That would help the whole country. But, Mark, let me back up just a little bit. My son is 18. I'm 60. And he's going to be a judge, and he's going to work at the polls. Tonight they're training for 3 hours to do this.
That's good.
I think what the problem is the senior citizens that work the polls, they get paid to do that. So they want them jobs. They tell their friends, but the young people need to be in there. My kid go to school and showed him that he was going to do this on the 7th of November, and they about flipped out.
All right, we're going to run out of time. Mark Crispin Miller, so why don't they do that? Is there any movement towards creating an across-the-board consolidated system?
Well, there is movement toward it. Jesse Jackson Jr. has proposed a constitutional amendment to standardize voting methods from state to state, but the first thing we have to do is just recognize that the government we have now, it's single-party government. It is a party dedicated to the subversion of American democracy. This is not a technical problem, Mark. This is a civic problem. So it's not a matter of trying to find a better mousetrap or find the best kind of machine.
All right,
we have to get right down to the problem and defend everything that this country is based on.
Thank you, Mark Crispin Miller. Great talking to you. We will be back. We're going to talk to an Army recruiter in the next hour. We're going to talk a little bit about gay marriage and some other hot topics. Stay with us. Mark Maron filling in for Jerry.
For Jerry Springer, Mark Maron on the radio.
All right, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. It's the top of the hour here. I'm Mark Maron filling in for Jerry Springer. That's Jim Earle over there.
Hiya.
Hiya, Jim. We're just talking to Mark Crispin Miller. I'll tell you, any of Mark Crispin Miller's books are very informative. When you talk about voter fraud, when you talk about the lengths that the Republicans will go to, not all Republicans, the ruling power. I mean, it is Mark's contention and my own that this particular administration, is aligned with obviously corporate interests, and they're really it's a single party government, as he said. But I do believe that there are decent people that want to do the right thing in the name of democracy. But when you got voter fraud like he's talking about, to the length that he's talking about, it does get a little doom and gloomy, because it does seem hopeless that if we cannot believe in the system, the one civic action that we can take to change the course of our democracy so this democracy can function and purge the bad elements over time, hopefully, then what do you got? I'm going to take a couple of calls. Mark Crispin Miller is not on the phone with us anymore, but I would I want to finish up on this topic. We got Chris in Bourbon, Indiana. Chris, how are you?
How are you, Mark?
I'm pretty good, man. What's on your mind?
Oh, it's great to hear you and Jim again. It's a breath of fresh air.
Oh, great. Well, I'm glad to be here.
As you may remember, I'm running for the state legislature here in Indiana.
How's that going?
Going well, I think. If everyone who votes for me really does vote, if everyone who says they're going to vote for me votes for me, I'll win in a landslide. But we'll see how that goes.
You better check those machines. From what I understand, what kind of voting machines they use out there in Indiana, Chris?
Touch screen, but there are some kind of electronic things where you push the button and a little light comes on, and then when all the lights seem aligned in the way you want them, you push the little red button, and that kind of files your vote.
That's amazing. You probably said exactly the instructions that a poll worker would give. you just push that button there, and it should work, right?
Those lights actually represent who your vote's being recorded for, because there's no way to check that.
Now, you're the guy that was actually inspired to run because of something we did on the air on Morning Sedition, right?
Me, yes.
That is so thrilling. And it's thrilling that you've gone the distance. What has it been like to sort of operate from the ground up, being a guy that had never done anything like this before? Has it been exciting? Are you finding the politics engaging? Do you see a way that you can make a difference? What have you learned along the way?
I've learned a lot. It's been I've been informed thanks to shows like yours and Air America. So right off the bat, I've hit the ground running on the issues. People, I've had standing ovations for speeches. I got a great write-up. I spoke for the county Democratic, their big dinner just last week, and I got five paragraphs, and like our state and national candidates got two paragraphs. So well, it's been exciting.
How quickly can you have your stuff together for the presidential campaign in 2008? We need somebody. The Democrats are looking for a new face with a lot of charisma. Are you going to be ready by then or what?
Not sure I'm ready to move. I kind of like my home here in Bourbon, but we'll see. Something needs to be done because it's disturbing me. And we've got a hot race for the U.S. Congress up here with Joe Donnelly versus Count Chocula. So I find it interesting. He's named after the cartoonish version of an aristocratic sucking parasite, but
who would settle for chocolate, of course.
It's but Chris Chocola, they're just running such mudslinging ads, it's despicable. But yeah, it's exciting. It's fun to get involved. I'm not getting a lot of help from the state level. I'm not what they consider a targeted race, so I'm pretty much on my own. But I've had a lot of help from the county level and some other people up here in the northern part of the state. So it's been exciting. I've had some labor unions get behind me, and most of a lot of individual donations.
Now, what were you doing? What were you doing, Chris Bourbon? What were you doing before? Because I remember talking to you on Sedition. I remember you calling, and I remember sending out the request, the plea that people with a cleaner record than I get involved in politics. Now, you were not a political. What were you doing before you became a candidate for state senator?
I used to be an editor for the associate editor for the Indiana State Medical Association. And then we've got three kids now, and so we moved closer to my wife's family, and that's why we're living up here in a small town in northern Indiana. And I was a stay-at-home dad. I worked part-time as the webmaster for the Earth Day Network.
This is a great story because you sound clear. I remember talking to you back in the day when we were on Sedition. Your confidence, you weren't sure what you were getting into or how you were going to do it. You were optimistic, but it sounds like you've got some legs now, and it sounds like you got some confidence around this thing. You're learning the lay of the land, and you're getting involved in a very earnest way and in a very important undertaking that who knows, it could change your life in terms of how you plan your future.
Well, yeah, and I think it's going to change a lot of people's lives because if we don't get control of our government again, we're in trouble. And that's resonating. I live in an extremely Republican district, but I'm having a lot of support from staunch Republicans. So,
are they saying, Chris Bourbon? What are the Republicans resonating with exactly?
Here in Indiana, there's a lot of issues with the governor, who's one of Bush's cronies, came right out of was out of the cabinet and came here and took over as governor. And he sold off our toll road against the wishes of the majority of the people. The polls were clearly, overwhelmingly against this. And he bullied all the state legislators. We had the Republicans control both houses of our state legislature. And that's the biggest issue. And they also forced us into a time change that no one really liked.
Wow.
And so, Republicans feel like they're not being represented.
Okay. Well, it's amazing that when you talk some sense and your heart's in the right place, that sometimes the chasm is not such a big chasm to bridge, the bipartisan chasm or the red state, blue state chasm, because a lot of the values outside of moral issues that are exploited and should be better left an individual's own business, a lot of the values in terms of being patriotic and respecting the democratic system and doing what's right for the people of the country are similar.
It's a pretty rural district, and you can't tell if you just talk about individual issues and keep this politics out of it. You can't tell whether someone's Republican or Democrat because we actually do agree on so much. And it's a lot of, like, I think you've talked to David Sirota in the past, and I think he finds the same thing out in Montana, that a lot of core Democratic issues really resonate with these people, but politics has gotten so polarized around a couple of wedge issues that people have lost sight of that. But
uneducated people. And Sirota's a big primary issue is that, you know, we've got to detach the government from corporate occupation, or else really nothing is going to get done on behalf of the people of the country.
The grassroots Republican voters resonate with that message, too. They just have seen too many Democrats that seem to be just as subservient to corporate issues that they think of that as a Democrat problem, when in fact the Republicans are worse at it, but the Democrats are not blameless in that too. So
and also you have a Republican administration that has gone against any of the traditional conservative values. They've expanded the government. They've got us into God knows how much debt, ridiculous amount of debt. China owns this country on paper. They've done everything that is really outside of the conservative rule book in terms of protecting the country in so many ways, on an economic way and also in a regular security way. They've made the world less safe. But I am so glad to talk to you, Chris Bourbon, and I'm glad that the campaign's going well. And if I am on the air anywhere, I certainly want to hear how it's going.
I will try to keep you informed. If nothing else, I'll send you an update after the election to at least your MySpace page or something. So
yeah.
But great.
I should have a regular website in a couple of weeks. Something happened with that. I don't know. The website designer's not the most consistent folk.
If you need someone new, that's what I do for a living. So
I don't want to distract you. You got a higher calling right now, Chris Bourbon, and good luck in the next couple of weeks.
Well, it's great talking to you.
Good talking to you. That's hilarious. I feel proud. I have a sense of pride right now. That guy ran for state senator because on Morning Sedition, I was at the for those of you who don't know, I hosted the morning show on Air America from its inception, and I was at the end of my rope, and I was almost pleading for regular people who are not necessarily politically minded to get involved in politics, to go out there and run for something, to see how it feels, to see what's exciting about, to facilitate some change. And this is a guy that did. And he's doing great. He sounds good.
Yeah. Cut to 3 years later when he's talking about building his own rocket ship to Mars. He's nuts and power mad.
No.
I owe it all to Mark Maron.
Well, your brother's a politician. That never happened to him.
Oh, he was power mad and drunk way before that.
Wait, but he's like a green guy.
Yeah, he's a very green guy. OrangeCountyOrganizer.com.
Yeah.
No, wait a minute. That's the wrong address now. You see, I don't even care about my family. That's how bad this political system is, Mark.
That's hilarious. I think that's just great. If I weren't selfish and determined to be a mouthpiece of some sort, I guess a politician is that as well. I need. He's inspiring me. I have a feeling I'm going to end up in office. Do you think that's even possible?
In a prison office, maybe?
No, stop it. Springer was a politician. He's probably going to be a politician again. Franken's probably going to be senator of Minnesota.
Yeah, but, you know, all these people, it's great. They're going to, they want to get involved. But what's going to happen? You have to raise money. And when you have to raise all that money, you got to sell out to people. And this whole political system is screwed unless people run on the platform that you have to reform the money.
The contribution.
Yeah, the contribution.
Absolutely. That's got to be a level playing field. This is the amazing thing about the time that we're living in right now, in election time, just how much money goes into, when they say, you know, this campaign has more money than that campaign, it has nothing to do with anything other than we are going to do everything we can to hit you over the head with crap So you go out and pull a lever in our name. It's got nothing to do with issues. Most of these guys, whatever they say, they're lying. They're all lying. They're probably not going to do anything. But all the money goes into ad campaigns. And I don't understand how people can read how much money is going into a particular ad campaign and still buy the ad.
All those millions of dollars being spent on you know, sleazy ads.
But what are they impressed with? The art direction of the ad, and that's what's going to make them vote? I mean, how stupid do you got to be bullied by advertising? I mean, in this day and age, I mean, it's got to be pretty devious and sublime for me to be suckered in by advertising, I think.
Jerry Brown used to take, what, $1 or $2 or $3 contributions or $100 at the most and a lock of Linda Ronstadt's hair, and that was it.
I love Diet Coke. Why did I just say that? That's weird. It's 18 past the hour. We are here on the Jerry Springer Show. I'm Mark Maron. That's Jim Earle. In a few minutes, we are going to be talking to Army Lieutenant Ronnie Randolph. He's an Army recruiter. Recruiting has gone up a little bit because they've lowered the standards. We'll talk about that coming up. 877-34-JERRY is the number if you got something to say. We'll be right back.
Your emails to Jerry at SpringerOnTheRadio.com may be tracked and read by the government. So make them real nasty. Less of you means more of Jerry. So call now, please. 877-345-3779 is 877-34-JERRY. Springer on the radio.
Springer on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron in for Springer. I'm here with Jim Earle. It's about 23 past the hour, just on the phone with Chris. I believe you pronounce his name Rahe. I'm not positive. R-A-H-E. He is a state Senate candidate in Indiana who I inspired. I inspired, Jim. I'm an inspirational speaker.
I know you are, man. And you know, I've been inspired by you for years.
But, yeah, that was you were inspired to contempt.
Well, come on. You know, inspiration is good,
I
regardless
difficult.
Of his contempt or whatever.
We've learned to love each other, and I think that's important. That's probably going over the top. We tolerate each other, and I think that's important for a relationship in terms of being on the air and friends and whatnot.
Absolutely, Mark. You know, and you know what? We're going to change lives, or we're going home today on the Greg Behrendt Show.
I watched that the other day. I don't want to talk about it because he's a friend of ours. I like Greg. I don't know what your issue is with him.
Continue rocking, people.
Continue rocking. Dude, we got to make fun of our comrades for. Hey, let's take another call. Bill in Cincinnati's been holding a while. What's up, Bill? How are you? You there, Bill? No? Frank in Staten Island from the old days. Frank, how are you?
Yeah, hey, I want to talk about the elections, but first I have a question. You're a comedian?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What would I know you from?
I'll be on Letterman next week. I got a Comedy Central Presents coming out.
Hey,
in a
you know, speaking of Comedy Central, you know who's funny? Jon Stewart. You ever talk to that guy?
Sure, I know Jon Stewart from years ago. He's pretty funny. He does a half-hour show on in the evening. So you were going to talk about elections and also try to hurt my feelings, but what do you have to say about elections?
Hurt your feelings? Gee,
I'm kidding.
What did I call into?
I love you, man. What do you got? What do you got? You got something, Frank? You got something?
Well, I want to talk. I wish Jerry Springer was here, but I guess I go with the other Jew.
Oh, man. Yes, I would be the other Jew, and there's many of us, and we run the world, Frank.
And let me ask you something. What's with your sidekick? What does he add?
Was this Dom Herrera?
Oh, you know what? I just realized who this is.
Sam Cedar?
Hey, listen, you little bastard. I know what you're trying to do. I get it.
Excuse me?
Yeah. Why don't you go over to Staten Island, climb up on that dump that you call a mountain, or the mountain that is a dump, and while you're up there, try and look for your mother, because she's probably at somebody's house doing something she shouldn't be doing for money. What do you make of that?
I'll be damned if a Jew was going to tell me what to do.
Well,
Excuse me.
Let me tell you something. What kind of background do you have? What are you some sort of like a Irish Italian mutt mix from Staten Island? What you just
Sicilian,
can't get off the
my friend.
What's that, buddy?
I'm from
I'm from Sicily. My family is Sicilian. You got a problem?
Yeah, what's next? You're going to tell me that you're going to have me taken care of? Yeah, mister, you got too much free time on his hands sitting on the garbage dump in his, what do you got, a condo on that dump out there in Staten Island? What do you got?
Hey, what are you doing exactly, huh? What are you, sitting around with your little MySpace? How old are you?
What's up, Chris?
What's going on, buddy?
How you doing, man?
I love the show. I love you. Miss you guys.
Now, you know what? Why didn't I know it was you from the beginning? Chris, let me just tell the people. Hold on. You stay on the phone. Kalo is it was our old board up. You had me going. I couldn't believe you say like you're some kind of comedian. I'm like, ah, what the hell is this guy? What? I didn't know it was you for like. How could I not know that voice? I was about to start crying. What kind of show did I call into? Listen to Mister, I get some sleep now, guy. You're working in the afternoon, so all of a sudden you're not so fragile as you were in the morning, huh?
I'm a whole different person, my friend.
I bet. So how's everything going with you? All right.
Pretty good, you know, doing the Rachel Maddow show on Air America, that's fun. And, just, you know, open for some more comedy.
Well, we're going to, look, I got the gig a couple days ago. What do you want us to do? I'm just, you know what, you can go to hell.
All right, guys, talk to you later.
All right, bye. That was Chris Lopresto. Wow. Did you know it was him right at the beginning?
No, but I thought it was kind of like a gag.
You did?
So nobody would call up and say, what are you, a comedian?
I am a sucker. And that guy's got one of the most distinctive voices in the world. I think there's too much distortion on this. In just a second, we're going to talk to Army Lieutenant Ronnie Rudolph. He's going to be on, and he's going to tell us about how, since the Army has lowered their standards, they've made some recruiting goals, 2,600 soldiers under the new lower aptitude standards. And apparently they're excited about this. I'm not sure that that would be the proper reaction to that particular situation. Lowering the aptitude test necessary to get into the military is. We'll talk to Ronnie Rudolph, Lieutenant Ronnie Rudolph, when we get back. Stay with us. 28 past.
Our number is 877-34-JERRY. Call now.
Springer on Air America Radio.
Hey, you can join our conversation at 1-877-34-JERRY. That's 1-877-345-3779. Right now, let's send it to Gerald Freermann for Croc News.
And now, Springer on the Radio brings you up to date with the latest from Croc News. Whenever important news affects you, Croc News is there with other stories to distract you. Now, here's Croc News reporter, Gerald Freermann.
I'm Gerald Freermann, Croc News. The government of Iraq. Yes, there is one. Shut up. The government of Iraq has agreed to a timetable for the withdrawal of American troops. Unfortunately, the timetable comes from Amtrak, so it's already running late. It could derail at any moment, and the food is just horrible. As Election Day nears, political ads get nastier. According to the TV, this year's choice is apparently between tax raisers and child molesters. Candidates no longer bother to say anything good about themselves, only bad things about their opponents. George Bush, who originally ran on the platform of restoring civility to American politics, says, "Mission accomplished, stay the course." Stay the course has been officially dropped from the administration's lexicon. A new phrase is being sought to better show the flexibility of planning in Iraq. New phrases being considered include season to taste, whip until firm, discard if seal is broken, and sold for the prevention of disease only. Elvis Presley is no longer the king of posthumous income. The highest-earning dead celebrity is now grunge rocker Kurt Cobain. Accordingly, Cobain's former home has been renamed Grungeland, and the daughter he had with Courtney Love will soon be marrying one of Michael Jackson's kids. As if they're his kids, right? Stay tuned to Croc News. We might not always be accurate, but at least we're not rigged like that Dancing with the Stars show. I'm Gerald Fairmont, Croc News.
Jerry Springer from the radio.
All right, Mark Maron in for Springer today. It's Thursday, about 35 past the hour. I'm sitting here with Jim Earle.
Hey, people.
Hey, folks. Recently, the Army made a lot of changes to make the recruitment process easier. Now, they have eliminated the requirement for a high school diploma. Not only that, they require the potential recruits need only a ninth grade education. The Army has also made PlayStation, Xbox video games, and chocolate bars that they hand out for free. And it seems that all in all, the tactics have worked. The Army has recruited 2,600 new recruits since the lowered aptitude standards took effect. And no one could be more pleased than Army recruiter Lieutenant Ronnie Randolph. He's on the phone with us right now. Thank you for joining us, Lieutenant.
Thanks for having me, Mr. Maron. It's great to be here.
Yeah, well, Lieutenant Randolph, it seems that some of the tactics, and we've talked about this before, when they put these into place, it sounds like they've worked, and that's a good thing, I guess you think.
It's a great thing. It's an Army strong thing. We are Army strong. 80,635 new soldiers. Man, it is good to be back on the winning side.
Now, are you nervous that the quality of recruit will be a problem, given that now the standards are low?
Here's the thing, Mr. Maron. I'm not worried so much about the quality of the recruit, all right?
Yeah.
Sure. We've lowered the standards. You know, there are people that aren't necessarily as smart that could get into the Army. But you know what? The Army has never been a place for rocket scientists. I mean, we're not fighting a war against, like, super intelligent aliens, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I'm sure there are not smart people on the other side of the war, too. And so we are getting soldiers that could possibly, like, dumb soldiers who could fight their dumb soldiers.
All right. Are these recruits going to be given special treatment because they are intellectually subpar or no?
If by special treatment you mean you know, are we going to perhaps play more pranks on them because they might not know that it's wrong to be sexually harassed for some reason?
Uh-huh.
You know, then yes, that is special treatment.
Okay. Now is the Army adverse to, you know, perhaps recruiting actually mentally challenged people? Is that
like mentally challenged? Do you mean like retarded?
Yeah, well, we don't use that word, but yeah, retarded, yeah.
I don't have a problem with recruiting retarded people. I think that's fine. As long as they have, like, guns, you know, and as long as they have fingers, like, you're talking about retards that have fingers, because if it's like an armless retard, then no, it's probably not a good idea.
Okay, all right. So now I've read something that are you planning, where are these? Is there? I guess what I'm trying to focus on with you is there a separation? Are they going to be separated? Where are these less intelligent recruits going to be stationed?
You know, they can be stationed anywhere. I mean, there was one thought that maybe we would try and, you know, steer some of the dumb soldiers of, you know, other countries, like some of the dumb soldiers of Iraq.
Yeah.
Like, put signs up that say, like, you know, hey, dumb fight over here.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we figured, why do that? Why limit them? You know,
right?
It's good. Just let them fight with everybody else.
Oh, I think that's probably good. I noticed that you're using the slogan "Army Strong." That's a new slogan. It used to be an Army of One, right?
It used to be an Army of One, but today we are Army Strong.
Uh huh.
It was an Army of One for a long time because recruitment was so low, but we finally reached our goal, 80,000 this year. That's what we were hoping for. We got 80,635. We not only met our goal, we blew past it by 635. That's impressive because we are Army strong.
So you think that the changing of the slogan had something to do with that, or that came after?
Oh, it definitely has something to do with it, because before we felt a little Army weak, and now we feel Army strong. Army stronger than ever.
Okay. All right. Well, do you think that morale is going to be better? Do you think that the military had to make this compromise?
I think we had to do something, and
yeah.
I think that it was time for us as an Army to get Army stronger, and
right.
We felt, you know, the best way to do that, the best way to get strong is with retards.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well,
a lot of people, you know, they talk badly about retarded people. But retarded people have They don't have the emotional connection that regular people have.
Right.
So they're great. They're ready for that, you know, for killing somebody. They don't, it doesn't affect them.
Well, I think it's a little disconcerting that it's come to that. But I think that, you know, we should probably, you know, stop talking about it right now, because I think that, yeah, I don't necessarily want you to get in trouble. And I appreciate your time, Army Lieutenant Ronnie Woodall, for taking the time out to talk to us for a minute.
Thanks for having me on the air, Mr. Marin. I appreciate it, because we are Army strong.
All right, buddy. Take care. That was Army Lieutenant Rodney Rudolph. I hope every time I talk to him, I think he's going to get in trouble, because he gets a little beside himself.
Well, it's a very controversial issue.
I think it's a little frightening. And I you know what I think is the most frightening about it is that, you know, if this were the right war, if this were a real issue of national security, they wouldn't have to go to these lengths to recruit people, that there would be a certain sense of civic duty and pride there. We will be back with the morning remembrance. It is 41 past the hour. I am Mark Maron. That's Jim Earle. We're subbing for Jerry. Talk to you in a second.
Jerry Springer, the voice of reason.
I love the guy.
On the radio. Talk to Jerry Springer on the radio.
Hey, Jerry!
On your telephone.
Oh.
Call 877-345-3779. That's 877-34-JERRY.
Springer on Air America Radio.
All right, Mark Maron in for Jerry Springer. I'm hanging out. Jim Earle just stepped out, but it looks like, yes, it is. And now, folks, to help us reflect in our times of sorrow and look back on the lives of the recently departed, we present grief correspondent Mort Mortensen with our weekly remembrance.
Oh,
you all right, buddy?
Yeah.
Nice to see you.
It's good to be back.
Yeah.
Spoonie Singh, founder of the Hollywood Wax Museum. Spoonie Singh, the eccentric entrepreneur who established the world-famous Hollywood Wax Museum, died of congested heart failure this week after a piece of plaque shaped like Delta Burke lodged in his aorta.
Yeah.
It's
sad. Yeah.
Born in India, Singh recalled growing up in a town so small, the wax museum was just a display of used Q-tips.
Oh, yeah? Were they shaped like anybody? Or
let me get on with this. I saw it in my eye.
Yeah, so you think it's dusty in here? Maybe you're allergic to Dr. Laura. This is her studio.
There's a lot of issues in here.
Yeah.
Singh started the museum in 1964 when a nation still mourning the loss of a young president longed to see actors in wax. Here's some fun facts about the museum. Because the camera adds 10 pounds to an actor's build, the museum strives to get the proportions correct every time, right down to the Olsen twins' shapely 83-pound physiques.
Oh, yeah, because they're thin.
They're very small and thin. More than 10 feet of leather was used to recreate Russell Crowe's gladiator uniform, while over 20 feet of parchment was needed to duplicate his bar tab.
Because he drinks a lot, that guy. You all right?
I'm all right, yeah.
You want Kleenex?
I got allergies. Yeah, thanks.
Why don't you go ahead and
take
care of that. All right.
You got a ficus in here or something?
Maybe it's these flowers here someone sent Dr. Laura.
At one time, the wax figure of Dracula had to be moved to the White House exhibit in order to frighten stray cats from sleeping inside Barbara Bush's vagina. A lot of wax took for the model that way. Singh requested family members painstakingly replicate his remains in wax so they can use his melted body parts to remove unsightly back hair.
Poor guy.
Dorothy Harmson, uh-huh. Co-founder of Jolly Rancher Candy Company.
Oh, I like those.
Yeah. Dorothy Harmson, co-founder of the Jolly Rancher Candy Company, best known for its fruit-flavored candy brick, died of a heart attack last month after trying to pass one. She and her late husband started their confections business back in 1940 with nothing more than 10 acres of farmland and a little dream of giving every kid in America a head start on chronic diabetes. They began with an ice cream truck, but later added hard candy 9 years later when they discovered how easy it was to put new labels on 9-year-old ice cream.
Yeah.
That would have been funnier if I screwed up.
I'm not sure about that.
Well, okay. We'll go back.
No.
At first, they made most of their candies in their barn, selling such confections as Double Blast Manure Sticks, Blue Raspberry Alfalfa Chews, and the disappointing Screaming Sour Road Apples.
Oh, yeah, I remember those.
Yeah.
Those
very chewy. Known for her immense art collection of paintings and American Indian textiles, Hampson had recently donated 3,000 pieces to the Denver Art Museum, all of them sticky.
I imagine, yeah.
Oh, boy. Harmson requested her body be boiled at 300 degrees, wrapped in clear cellophane, and twisted at both ends.
That makes sense.
Well, Mark.
Yeah.
This has been the Weekly Remembrance. Until next time, this is Mort Mortensen saying, "Who's chopping onions?"
All right. Well, thank you, Mort, and send Jim in on your way out. You can
can
stop the music there and. That was always enlightening. Hey, Jim. Mort was just in here.
Hey, Mark. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a pretty good one there. That was got a little nasty. I'm playing the prude because sometimes I feel like I have to.
Life is ugly, Mark.
It is. I'm gonna be here tomorrow as well. We got
like I said, life is ugly.
Oh boy. If you have any closing thoughts, if you'd like to say something to me in the last few minutes of the show, 877-34-JERRY is the number. As I said, Jerry will be gone tomorrow as well. Jim and I will be manning the ship here in Dr. Laura's studio with her bookshelf. We should go through her stuff.
Don't touch anything. Do not touch anything.
I think that's an Emmy or some sort of strange sexual toy.
It looks very much like an Emmy, but I think it's some sort of radio.
Well, we're going to go through her stuff, and you guys hang out for 1 second. Give me a call if you want. It's 50 past. I'll tell you about tomorrow's show in a second, so stay here. It's Mark Maron in for Jerry.
Tradition. Conservatism. You know, the kind of crap our forefathers fought against. Progress with Jerry Springer on the radio. Get right through. Email jerry@springeronthe.com.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
All right, 54 past the hour here, closing in on the top of the hour. Mark Maron here with Jim Earle, filling in for Jerry Springer, hanging out, having a good day. It's been pretty good. I had a good time.
Yeah.
I was happy to do this for Uncle Jerry. Going to do it again tomorrow. Let's take one final call here. We got Andy in Brookhaven, Pennsylvania. Andy, what's on your mind, my friend?
Hey, Mark. How's it going?
Pretty good. So you're in Pennsylvania where Santorum is going to go down.
Yep, Santorum and Kurt Weldon. I'm part of a little group that's been dogging Weldon wherever he has a speaking engagement.
Weldon gets sweet deals for the family, Weldon?
Right, that guy. 7th Congressional District.
Uh-huh. And how's that been going? What have you been doing?
Well, last week we were protesting outside of a debate he was having with Joe Sestak. And not that that's necessarily remarkable, but what happened was we got major press coverage.
Mm-hmm.
All four networks from Philly, the big newspapers, and the BBC were there, filmed and interviewed all of us.
Wow! Just that, and just by coincidence. I mean, were they covering him? They didn't know you were going to be there.
I'm not sure.
How exciting is that? When I don't believe there's a left wing press. I believe there's a right wing press and an irresponsible press. For them to start covering that is a great. It's great news. That means that the momentum culturally is shifted to include you, which is awesome.
Right now, in fairness. Kurt did have supporters across the entrance from us, but the guy from Channel 3 went over there, spoke to him, came back to us and said, well, you know, I think maybe you guys might want to know this. The guys over there, they're all paid staffers. So all the people that were out supporting Weldon with signs were all his paid staffers.
Oh, that is so pathetic. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, that's well. Thanks for calling us with that information, Andy, and thanks for listening.
All right, great to hear you again, guy.
All right, take it easy.
See ya.
That's hilarious. They pay the staffers to march the signs. That's how few people like the guy.
That's like paying your audience at the Emmys, you know?
Do they do that?
Yeah, they pay the seat fillers.
Man, I ought to start paying people. The more people would come to my shows. I'm Mark Maron. I'll be here tomorrow. That's Jim Earle. You can go to MySpace and find me and buy my CDs if you want. Not that I'm selling anything, because there's a lot of funny stuff on there. Jim, you can go to, you got your website?
Yeah, jimearle.com. You can buy nothing there.
Great. Tomorrow, Ariel Levy, the author of Female Chauvinist Pigs, Women and the Rise of Raunch Culture. She's going to tell us where feminism is at and where porn and strippers fit into that, if it does. Also, Christopher Hedges, the author of War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning, and also Losing Moses on the Freeway, The Ten Commandments in America. Very bright guy. Incredible to talk to. Looking forward to talking to him. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good day.
This is Springer.
Here's Olympic.